This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We're now going to focus on the Promotion of Access to Information Amendment Bill, which was adopted by Parliament yesterday. What does it mean for you and me, and whether or not you think that it is the answer to transparency when it comes to party political funding? And this bill is, of course, in addition to the bill that was ascended by President Cyril Ramaphosa earlier this year, and that is the Party Political Funding Bill. We'll be in conversation with political analyst Ralph Matega. We'll also be speaking to Zahira Grimwood, who is a political systems researcher at My Vote Counts, and also we'll be speaking to Tere Dzilani, chairperson of the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa, and also the former vice chairperson of the IEC. Zahira, let's start with you. Good morning and welcome to Power Talk. Can you just quickly explain to us the difference between this amendment to the PIA Act as well as the Party Political Funding Act?
Morning, Aljan. Thank you for having me. It's very difficult to explain it very quickly, as you requested, because it's a very complex legal matter, mm-hmm. but I'll try my best. But I just started by saying this, that prior to the Political Party Funding Act, many years before the Political Party Funding Act was even conceived by Parliament, we had the Promotion of Access to Information Act.
Yeah.
And that was passed in the early 2000s. And that was the legislation that organizations tried to utilize to request information from political parties on their private funding sources. And in matters where NGOs had gone to court, including My Vote Counts, where we'd argued that new legislation should be drafted so that political parties could proactively disclose their donations because PIA was not effective, the courts didn't want to overstep their role by saying that new legislation should be drafted. So we challenged the constitutionality of the Promotion of Access to Information Act for failing to provide information on political parties' private funding, because what the PIA allows for is for one to make a request to either a public body or a private body for information for the sake of, you know, transparency, provisions to strengthen our fulfill our constitutional principles of transparency and accountability, but also to allow for one to have information to exercise one's rights as a South African citizen. And we had made requests to different political parties through PIA, and we'd usually only receive a response from one or two political parties, but not with the information that we wanted. And if one is not able then to get the information that one wants through PIA, the next step that one can utilize is litigation. And that is then what we did in the court, saying that PIA is ineffective in facilitating access to information on the private funding of political parties and independent candidates. And at that point, there was no Political Party Funding Act. So when the court order came about in the My Vote Counts case last year, it had ordered that Parliament amend the Promotion of Access to Information Act. And in that judgment, it acknowledged that the Political Party Funding Act was going to be passed in Parliament, but said that the judgment had no bearing on the Political Party Funding Act. In June 2018, last year, when that judgment was delivered, it gave Parliament 18 months to amend PIA. Now Parliament has amended PIA at a later stage, but also at a period after the Political Party Funding Act has been signed. And it's very clever in the way that they drafted this PIA amendment bill, because they've dovetailed it with the provisions in the Political Party Funding Act. And the Political Party Funding Act has no date for implementation. So even if PIA is then passed in Parliament, without the Political Party Funding Act, we have no information on a political party's private funding sources. And it's purely just being utilized, this amendment now, as a formality. And we have no clarity on which day we will finally see the sources of political parties' private funding.
Sure. Is there a way at all that if it goes through through the NCOP to lobby the president that the bill must have a date?
No. So there is no obligation on the president to provide a date. And there's now this gray area. Now, what route do we take now as civil society? So the IEC has to finish the draft regulations for the Political Party Funding Act. They said that they are almost done with those regulations. And thereafter, the president has to then provide a date. But he should have provided a date for implementation when he signed
it. So now, are we just waiting in... I don't know.
So we've written to the president on more than one occasion to try and apply pressure on him to gazette a date. I think at that time it was the inauguration, and so the attention of the media was not on this big problem. So we've applied pressure. We will continue to apply pressure, but now it's purely in the hands of the president. The buck stops with the president. So he has a responsibility now so that we're able to have then access to the information long before the local government elections. And we would think at least a year before the local government elections, people should be able to have access to this information so that when one votes, one makes an informed vote.
So in terms of PIA, does this then mean that you and I, as ordinary citizens, will have access to that information without even having to go through the IEC?
Well, see, that's the problem, is that, okay, now PIA has been amended to include political parties as a reference that now they're also being regulated, but one still has to make requests for the information. And the records that are going to be available in response to those requests will only be made from records that are collected by the Independent Electoral Commission as per the Political Party Funding Act. So we're in this mess now, and now the biggest problem is that the Political Party Funding Act has no date for implementation.
Okay. And the Political Party Funding Bill would apply to all political parties, even those who may not secure a seat in Parliament or any legislature or council for that matter?
So all political parties that register to contest elections will have to disclose of their private funding sources above 100,000 rand in one financial year to the IEC.
Okay. Terry Tselane, the chairperson of the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa and also the former vice chairperson of the IEC, also joins the conversation. Terry, how important is this bill, particularly the PIA bill, and then also taking into consideration what Zahira said now about the Party Political Funding Act?
It is quite critical. Remember that the elections are not really about the political parties, but are about the will of the people. So for people to be able to make a decision about what choices they want to take, they must actually have information that will be able to enable them to make those kind of decisions. And then therefore, knowing the sources of funding for political parties is therefore quite critical for a person to be able to make a decision as to whether they are prepared to support a political party or not. So it is not only about the manifesto of the political party, but it is also about the source of funding, because it plays quite a critical role in terms of a person making a decision about that particular political party.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to ask you this, and then I'm going to ask Ralph to come in on this as well. How true is it that voters care about who is funding a political party? Terry, let's start with you.
No, I mean, it's quite important. I mean, obviously, if, you don't know, you are obviously going to follow the political party using whatever instruments that are there that can be able to assist you to make a decision. But once you know what the source of funding is, it is quite critical, because if it is the sources that are irregular or those that are not consistent with your wishes, you then can make a different decision about that particular political party.
Okay, Ralph, do you agree with that point? Because from what I've observed, there isn't really much care that's given by the broader political, the electorate in the broader spectrum about who is funding a political party?
Well, good morning to my colleagues, Zahira and Brateri. Aldrin, I think that the voters are evolving. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the voter that you have today, the voter that went into the May 8th election is a different voter than the one who went into the 2016 local government election. And also the voter that went into the May 8th election had access to more information, mm-hmm. was processing more and more complex information. Mm-hmm. I do think that there is an appetite to bring more information so that we can help the voters to make good decisions. So I do think that once that information is available, once that information becomes commodity in our political discourse, in a way that it helps us understand the decisions of political parties, why they are taking different campaigns,
yeah.
and why they are not doing certain campaigns. Once that information of who funds them is available, it gives us a perspective to understand that. And I think that the voter actually gets a better understanding mm-hmm. of the conduct of their parties. Remember, Aldrin, at the center of this, why we're doing all this, why there is a need for this transparency. The chief goal here is to ensure that a genuine relationship exists between the voter and political parties. And observation over the years is that money tend to infiltrate that relationship, where people with deep pockets, they can come in and they can provide money, and in that way they can turn the political parties away from the promises that parties have made to the people, mm-hmm. and therefore serving those interests. That is the ultimate goal. So the more information is available, that information will be processed by you and me to help the voter understand the behavior of their political leaders. And when the voter go into the booth armed yeah. with that kind of an information, it's a much, much better voter than the voter who doesn't have that information.
Okay, so when we come back, the conversation that I want to have is the definition of party political funding. Because I remember during the arguments in the Constitutional Court, one of the points that was raised by Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng was that contribution to a party would not necessarily only be in the form of money. Sometimes, like we've seen, for instance, with the Democratic Alliance and Steinhoff, you'll get a car, for instance. And sometimes you get a service being rendered for free. Does that not qualify as party political funding? We'll have that conversation just after this.
Aldrin St-Pierre, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
And we continue our conversation on the Promotion of Access to Information Amendment Bill, which has been adopted by Parliament yesterday. Zahira, the question around defining party political funding and the point that was made by Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng is that somebody rendering services, whether the person is an accountant, for instance, and rendering services to a political party for free, that must then constitute funding.
Yes. So I think one thing we must remember is that there will always, I think, be problems with which whatever system that we try to put in place, as political parties can very strategically try to find ways to maintain secrecy of the kinds of donations that mm-hmm. they receive, if they mm-hmm. can do so. In the Political Party Funding Act, though, the definition of a donation does include donations in kind, and that services are included in the definition as well as assets. Mm-hmm. Our concern is the fact that trusts are not included in that definition. And you've seen with the CR17 campaign, mm-hmm. the argument that the president had made when it comes to the fact that he's arguing he doesn't have an obligation to disclose of the funds allocated to his campaign, is that then it could then set a bad precedent for the implementation of the Political Party Funding Act. If political parties can say, oh, no, but this funding didn't come directly to us, the political party, but it went to our trust, even though the party still benefits from the funding in that's been allocated to
yes.
the trust and the interest and dividends that arise out of there. For one example, I can refer to is Chancellor House and the Hitachi Power Africa scandal,
yes.
where they, if I'm not mistaken, benefited billions in dividends from that deal that was struck. So mm-hmm. there's going to be a need to strengthen the definition of a donation to include trust as well. Mm-hmm. However, for now, we are just concerned with pushing for the implementation
external
of the
party
act to try and avoid there being argument for political party to say, okay, but if there's this problem, let's take this back to Parliament. And we don't want that. We want this implemented as soon as possible, and thereafter it will be easier to make such amendments.
Yeah. Terry, that point around intra-party political funding?
Yeah, the Act, which now has got to be implemented, does deal with that particular aspect. In other words, when we're dealing with the issue of the donations, whether that donation is coming from a political party or coming from a private company, that must be declared if it is over 100,000 rands. So I think to a large extent, once this has actually been implemented, it will actually be able to properly regulate that kind of relationship.
Do you think that, for instance, if let's say the Act was in place, any other opposition party would have been able to argue that the money that was donated to the CR17 campaign or whichever other candidate was running to become ANC president, as the president himself actually said in at the union buildings, that there are some people who were running, were in the running, in the race, who were receiving donations also from the same source, that based on that, that could be constituted as party political funding, using the Act and its current form?
There's a technicality there, and I think it's going to be very, very difficult because the current Act does not necessarily regulate that kind of funding. It only looks in terms of funding that is going to a political party. Now, in a case where a candidate is campaigning to become a leader of a political party, it becomes quite complex, and then how that is going to be managed, I think it's going to be quite difficult.
Okay. Ralph, I just quickly want you to touch on this, and then we're going to go to the news headlines, and then you're going to expand a bit on it.
Yeah, I think it's a very important issue. The money that seems to be in circulation within political parties where candidates are vying for internal leadership seem to be quite a vast amount of money. I mean, you speak about the CR17 campaign, which is quite a lot of money, 500 million, as it is being reported. Mm-hmm. And for me, the Act is silent now. So this is the reason why I believe that we need a longer, comprehensive, broader electoral reform. Yeah. These are bits and pieces, but we need some kind of a white paper or whatsoever on broader electoral reforms, where we will be looking at those behavior and looking as to how the current legislation tie up to that, where the gaps are, where necessary amendments are. Yep. Because I think there is a lot of gaps.
Does the suggestion by Zahira work that, listen, let's just get the bill implemented and let's work with the bill right now and then at a later stage, well, rather the Act, and let's at a later stage come up with these bits and pieces that you're speaking about?
Of course. We cannot wait. I mean, that is what has to be done. We have to work with what's out there. And while we are doing that, reform has to be underway. Remember, you never finish electoral reform. Political parties perfect the system. Mm-hmm. There's always someone out there who is going to try to channel money in a manner that the legislation has not envisaged.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about donation of a kind. I've got a few examples I can cite for you that are quite interesting and quite controversial that the legislation will need a broader, reform we'll have to deal with.
Okay, let's do that just after Power News headlines.
Power Talk with Aldrin St-Pierre, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
And we're taking your calls on 0861-987-000. Your take on the promotion of access to information amendment bill, but at the center of this particular conversation is party political funding. And early on during the open line, we had a conversation about you had funding versus lobbying versus bribing. So when does the funding actually become money used to lobby, or when does the funding become money used to bribe, even if you openly declare that this is the money that this particular company has donated to our political party? Would you be able to have mechanisms in place to discern whether or not the money that has been contributed to the political party has been used to influence policy, or has been used actually as a bribe? Because as I said earlier on during the open line, that influencing policy is not just influencing policy based on ideology. No. Influencing policy also means influencing policy that will have an impact on the balance sheet, that will have an impact on the bottom line. And we're in conversation with Tere Tselane, who is the chairperson of the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa, Zahira Grimwood, who is a political systems researcher at My Vote Count, and author and political analyst Ralph Matera. Ralph, you wanted to touch on donations in kind.
Yeah, well, you know, the point, Aldrin, is that political parties are institutions. They always find a way around the legislation. Mm-hmm. So donation is not only in the form of hard cash or quantifiable currency, if you like, but it can be in kind. I mean, I'll give you an example. I think it's last week I wrote a piece where a Danish political party,
yes,
actually wanted to donate to a service to the DA. And in Denmark, in the disclosed document in Denmark, the money is quantified into a certain amount there, Danish kroner. And mm-hmm. on the side of the receiving, on the side of the DA, they receive political services. Could be workshopping, could be trips, could be many other form of assistance that actually that money was used to provide that. So you are going to find a situation where if your legislation does not deal with this, if your legislation does not regulate this, mm-hmm. you are going to find a situation where political parties put together shadow organization of
yeah,
some sort.
But wasn't the services that they were providing services to help with coalition governance?
It was the service that has to do with coalition government. It's controversial because on the side of the Danes, the controversy is that they're saying this should be development finance. It's not the money that is meant to help the party on the basis of ideological mm-hmm. inclinations and so forth. So that is the controversy, that side. But the help here, it's on coalitions, it's on negotiating coalitions, and it is also on perhaps some genuine strategies. But the issue is that in this instance, it's not hard cash.
Yeah.
It is the service. Actually, the service can actually even be more, and people can just put aside organizations that procure this service and provide them. And mm-hmm. on your balance sheet, you are not showing the donation. So we need a wider, comprehensive, regulation mm-hmm. in order to bring about effect of the current legislation.
This then goes to the point that I just raised now, is that how are we able to discern whether the money, funding, or even the services that's being provided is services that's being provided not to influence policy and to influence outcomes of certain decisions that's being taken by a political party, whatever the political party wants to advance in parliament, and even when does funding a political party become bribing a political party?
Aldrin?
You get that?
Yes, I did. You know what? I mean, your question begs the very same question that what we have in terms of the legislation, the behavior that we want to legislate on, we want to regulate. Have we cast our net wide enough? I mean, mm-hmm. you are talking about the difference between parties, organizations, and influencing the direction of a party. You're talking about public interest organizations such as You Are My Vote Count. Those are public interest organizations.
Yeah.
They are not acting for an insular group. It's for the general public interest. But there could be other lobbies. Now, how do we differentiate between this organization and organizations that will want a particular leadership within the party? Again, our laws do not tell about this. Our laws do not distinguish a lobby organization from a public interest organization. And for me, it's a concern because organizations that are doing public interest do not want to have to deal with the reputational crisis that is brought by some organizations that are pure lobbyist organizations but sitting as public interest organizations.
Zahira, is that a fair point? Hi, Zahira, are you there? Okay, we have lost her. Terry, on that particular point around being able to discern whether the money that is being donated, because for me, even though the money is, even though it could be declared publicly that this is the money that we have received as a political party from this particular company, how are we then able to discern whether that money was used actually with the intention to influence policy direction or actually with the intention to bribe a tender outcome at a later stage?
Well, it is going to be very, very difficult to be able to make that determination. However, what the Act has tried to do is to indicate what the money should actually be used for. Mm. But I think it is also important, you know, to raise this issue that in the area where they are dealing with the interpretation on this political funding act, they differentiate between the donation as well as the donation in kind. And the only aspect that is excluded, it is actually personal services provided on a voluntary basis. All other monies that are given to the political party or lent to a political party or received on behalf of a political party, that is regarded as donation, even if it is donation in kind.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Act does cover that aspect.
Okay. And to the point that was raised by Ralph, he takes it a step further, speaking about public interest groups, like, for instance, My Vote Counts, whether you speak about the Institute of Race Relations, whether you speak about Corruption Watch, for instance. These are organizations that also receive money from private companies or even private individuals. Who is looking over them? Who's watching over their shoulders?
Remember that the purpose of the Act, as well as the provision that now, the amendment that has actually been enacted, is basically to regulate political parties that are contesting the elections. So the lobby groups are not necessarily covered through the Act, even though they're playing a role that could actually influence the decision of a voter.
Powerful role that even decides who the leader of the party is.
No, but I'm saying that it's an important point that you are raising. Mm. However, it is not necessarily covered in the current Act, because that current Act only regulates the relationship and behavior and conduct of political parties that are registered as political parties.
If I come in there, Aldrin, if you could allow me, for me, this is it's a big gap, because money is used in many different ways. So I do think that that is why we need to have a broader sense of reforms, that we need to have a white paper, whatever it is, that we need to have a policy position on this thing when it comes to reforms within the electoral system, where we look at the risks that come out and we look at ways in which we can mitigate those risks through this legislation, looking at the judgments that have been passed by the court. I mean, it cannot be, we cannot turn a blind eye to differentiating between lobbyists and public interest groups. I mean, in the U.S. System, which one observes, lobbyist organizations are very clearly defined, Aldrin. And if you are a lobbyist, you are not allowed to join Congress within a particular time and so forth. So there is a clearly regulated terrain there. And I think it is based on the maturity that money is going to influence our politics. We know there is lobbying in South Africa on the policies, just that it's not been done formally and so forth. There are many ways in which it can be done. And I think that the best way to keep our politics clean is to just regulate and say that if you want to form a lobby group, this is how it looks like. And if you are a public interest organization, in a similar manner that the court had actually said recently with BLF, that look, you can't be registered at a political party. There is a criteria there that needs to be followed.
Yeah. Zahira, do you agree with Ralph that there is a gap in the policy, or even in the policy position around, for instance, when you focus on public interest groups as well as lobbyists, that there should be a clear distinction as well because of the power of money and also the influence that that organizations such as yourself, for instance, like My Vote Counts, the influence that you hold?
So when it comes to the distinction between lobbying groups and then public interest organizations, I think I'm not an expert on that. I think Ralph would be the best person to refer to. I know lobbying groups has even been utilized to refer to My Vote Counts. And that some may say that, you know, we're lobbying just on with the goal of getting a certain policy in place for political party funding transparency. But I think what's important when it comes to this conversation is that any contribution that is made to a political party, whether it's donation in cash or kind, a service, it has to be considered in terms of the risk that it could pose if there is a case that there is a conflict of interest with a certain politician that is receiving that funding or with a political party and how they stand to benefit. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to say that someone just gives a donation to a political party, that one would give millions and millions of rand without actually trying to benefit from that. And I think we need to highlight the business community and their role in particular, and how from the get-go of knowing that the African National Congress was going to be unbanned, business had a very strong interest in developing relationships with political parties at that point to lobby them to take on certain policies in favor of neoliberal economic reforms. Mm-hmm. And then you had what arose out of that, a lot of members in the African National Congress's National Executive Committee gaining shares and directorships on the boards of various companies that were regarded to be part of the old economic guard. Mm-hmm. So I think we can't just say that then if we see a company such as Standard Bank or MTN or Absa, such large corporations, are just doing it for the sake of multi-party democracy promotion. Yep. I think there needs to be a stronger investigation into what are the kinds of relationships between a political party and any company or any person mm-hmm. that provides a contribution, because you know, there's that argument that there's no free lunch.
Yeah, as the Chief Justice has said as well. So let me just quickly get your take on this. All three of my guests, I think you guys can respond to this. I'll start off with Zahira. There is the suggestion that that was brought by Dr. Mbuseni Ndlozi yesterday, that instead of private companies donating directly to political parties, rather have a central system where the money goes into those coffers and then the money then gets distributed to the various political parties. Is that an option? Is that something that could work, Zahira?
Well, there is already a provision in the Political Party Funding Act that sets up a fund where one doesn't have to donate directly to a political party, but one would then donate to what is called this private fund or the multi-party democracy fund. And I am in support of the idea of then donating to this fund for funding to be allocated to all political parties, because in the current dominant party system that we have, it's usually larger political parties and dominant parties that are even able to attract more private funding due to the influence that they have on the state. Mm-hmm. However, the issue that I have with the multi-party democracy fund in its current form is that if there's a provision that allows for one to donate anonymously if one decides then to donate to this fund as opposed to donating directly to a political party.
Mm. Okay, Terry, your take on it?
Yeah, I agree with that the current act, which is supposed to be implemented, actually does cover that in a sense that there is an aspect that deals with the multi-party democracy fund, and mm-hmm. that multi-party democracy fund is supposed to be managed by the IEC according to a particular fund. You may recall that in the with the current arrangement, what we call represented political parties is managed by the IEC, but the formula that is used there is 90-10, which means 90% of the funds are allocated proportionally and 10% is divided to the political parties that are represented in Parliament equitably.
Yeah.
Now, the limitation with what we have is that it only regulates represented political parties. In other words, those political parties that are in national and provincial legislatures. So when the fund is allocated, even though it is going to a central source, which is the IEC in this case, mm-hmm. That money will be allocated with one-third will be allocated equitably and two-thirds will be allocated proportionally. Mm-hmm. But it is still going to parties that are represented in Parliament and not those others that are outside the national and provincial legislature.
Yeah, yeah. Ralph, your take on it?
Yeah, I think there are many innovative ways. What they're talking about is just the technicality of how do you pull the funds together. As long as there is transparency, mm-hmm. that who is put into that big pool of money, we need to know who has put that money. No anonymous donors into that. But that is just one of the tools that you can actually use. But I want to challenge my colleagues and your listeners as well to say that, look, let us be innovative here. I personally, because of my experience with political science, I do favor taxpayer-funded political parties. In that way, we can put spending caps. We can be able to set the regulation. Remember, yes, taxpayer-paid. I'll quickly tell you what I mean. I mean, if you have the taxpayer-funded, we can have a certain portion of the of party funding. If we have a what we call spending cap, where parties are limited, there is no spending cap in South Africa now. You can go 2 billion, another person can go 200,000. So we need to have caps because the aim is to allow for equitable competition of political parties and give voters a very realistic choice here. So my view is that maybe we should consider saying that out of the, once we've put a spending cap, we've got an idea of how much budget we want to put for elections. We can count. We should arrive at that. We've got skillful people who can help us on how much the entire budget of the country for elections should be among parties.
Isn't that a bit complicated? Because some political parties, for instance, would say that we have no intention of contesting every ward. We just want to contest certain wards.
Well, Aldrin, formulas can be worked to bring in and factor that. The point is that we need to say that maybe we're allocating 60% of the broader budget to taxpayer, then the remaining amount can be given to the private sector. The reality is that we'll never get hold of our democracy if we are not willing to pay for it. That is just for me, the ultimate goal. We should pay for our democracy. And I think if we pay for it, we can keep it clean. That should be the ultimate goal. We can't mortgage our democracy. We should stop at this thing.
So that has been part of the policy debate for quite some time. I mean, there has been this consideration that if there should be a study done into how one would balance private and public funding. And that conversation has been had. I mean, as I mentioned now, it's something that we've pushed for as MVC for various other amendments of the Party Funding Act, but we want the Party Funding Act implemented as soon as possible. The issue with having to, I guess, come up with the best, allocation regime in terms of balancing public and private funding is that we don't have even records of how political parties spend their monies.
Yeah.
So we would need to do a costing exercise to make those kind of determinations, and we need records, we need transparency. And thereafter, we'd be able to then determine, okay, where is it best to then draw the line when it comes to spending and what do parties need to be able to spend on when it comes to the election campaigns and it comes to operational costs. How can we differentiate between spending caps on a local to a national level? And, you know, where there have been cases of wasteful expenditure and unnecessary expenditure, which should be restricted so that our political parties are not driven by patronage and trying to waste monies that they receive and not spend it for the purposes of party development, but that the money is being used efficiently.
Sure. Terry, this sounds very complicated. You've looked at what's happening on the continent, for instance, and I wonder whether a party, like, for instance, a new party that is outside of the system, how would that party be allocated funding?
Well, the majority of countries in the African continent are not actually regulating private funding. However, what Ralph was suggesting, it's actually applicable in quite a number of other jurisdictions. For instance, in the U.S., there is a cap that is actually introduced so that, you know, a political party does not actually get more than so much, you know, for purpose of participating in electoral process. So it is doable. It is part of the debate. And I think, you know, it is something that should actually be considered for our country.
Okay. I'm going to is that Ralph?
Yeah, Aldred. I do agree there. I do think that we should really, really consider that. And remember, the law of economics say that if you have a spending cap, it means that a billionaire company that wanted to allocate to someone else, they will find it naturally heavy maybe to redistribute to others because of the limit as to maybe how far you can go. You create more of equality in the whole process. I think once you get to that level, we can then have a realistic sense of how much does it take to activate a voter? People in the Nordic countries are getting closer to that level of data. How much does it take to activate one Nordic data? when one Nordic voter, or for example, a Swedish voter in a general election, we should get a more or less figure on that.
Okay. I just quickly want us to expand on something that Zahira mentioned earlier on, and that is the relationship between a private business as well as political political parties. Ralph, your take on this. We know about politically exposed people, you know? Although we have a huge focus on party political funding, but what about the politically exposed people? That the person who was a minister of a certain portfolio is now all of a sudden a chairperson of a certain private company. And also taking into consideration, of course, what the Constitution says, that you have the right to association. Ralph, quickly, your take.
That is the revolving door, Aldrin, that we need to balance, because if you are regulators today has got ambitions of being on the board of a company that is a dominant company in the sector that they are regulating, you have conflict of interest from day one. You don't have to wait for it to materialize. That person is just not well positioned to provide the regulatory regime that will benefit the people. So we need to look into the revolving doors. People need to declare their shares and so forth, so that we know. We live in a complex environment. The best way out of it is not to police people, but is to say to them, we need critical information just so we understand your behavior better.
Okay, Zahira, your take on it?
I want to use this opportunity just to make a comment on public funding and the comment that Ralph had made earlier on the need to increase public funding. And my vote counts has currently been undertaking an evaluation on public funding allocated to political parties. And it's commonly perceived that it's only one piece of legislation that allocates public funding. But we've been looking at different pieces of legislation that allocates more public funding than what is commonly believed. And what we found is what the IC discloses in terms of the public funding political parties in the national and provincial legislatures receive over four financial years is only 11% of the total public funding allocated to all represented political parties. So there actually needs to be more enhanced transparency in terms of how much the total public funding allocations are made to each political party. Before then, also, we have this discussions of trying to increase public funding.
Mm-hmm. And your comment on the revolving door that Ralph spoke of?
So when it comes to politically exposed persons and this issue of people being fingered out when it comes to corruption and then still remaining as members in the party, the issue is that the party has too much power to determine if that member will remain a member and serve as a public official. And I think there needs to be strengthened laws in terms of political parties' internal affairs so that their disciplinary committees aren't then just merely on paper, that they actually have rigor and are able to discipline those who found guilty of corruption to then be removed and not be allowed to sit in our public offices.
Okay. Terry, your take on it?
Well, there is no provision at the moment to regulate that kind of relationship. I mean, you've got quite a number of people who were ministers who are now sitting in the boards of quite a number of private companies. And I think, the issue that must be debated is to what extent does that relationship create an influence and conflict in relation to, their position and the position where they have actually been ministers or holding particular political office. And I think it's something that should actually be looked into.
Okay, thank you so much. Terry Tselane, chairperson of the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa, political systems researcher at My Vote Counts. That is Zahira Grimwood, as well as Ralph Mateja, political analyst and author. A quick tweet here from Sabelo says, whenever one or more is found guilty of corruption or misuse of funds, a policy that will hold all cabinet members or provincial executives or municipal management accountable, depending on who it is, should be made and all together pay back the money.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.